Today we have a very special guest, Kristen Scott Benson, who you may know from the Graspels. You may know that she's won 4 or 5 Banjo Player of the Years from IBMA. Tremendous musician. She has a brand new album about to come out called Stringworks. It's on Mountain Home Records. If you haven't visited with Kristen on the show for a while, last time she joined Unreal Bluegrass, it was with Sonny Osborne. We did a 3-way phone call, and it was a lot of fun. You can go back and visit those on unrealbluegrass.com if you wish. Brand new album is a very, very good one. Again, the title is Stringworks. One of the best banjo players, I think, in our generation, Kristen Scott Benson. Very happy to have back Kristen Scott Benson to Unreal Bluegrass. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, this new album, it comes out the 22nd, I guess, it's released, Stringworks.
That's right.
And I have this as your third, I guess, album under your name. Is that right?
You know, there was actually one before that I haven't sold in years that I did as a teenager. But this is the third one that has been on the label.
Okay. Because Second Season was the last one. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. All right. I remember that one well. And then this one came out. And I was telling you before we turned on it's on Mountain Home, which is a fine label. I was telling you before we turned on the recorder that every time I listen to it, I find a different favorite. I have several different favorites on it, but we can talk about that in a little bit. But first of all, boy, it jumps right out of the box. The very first tune on the album, just absolutely, in case anybody was wondering, it's absolute high tempo. That is, that's one of my favorite ones on there, too. Happens to
Great
be
Waterton.
Great Waterton. Yeah, I don't know the reason I was struggling is I couldn't remember the name because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, so Great Waterton is very special to us. You know, when you write these instrumentals, one of the funnest things is you get to name them. And because they're just tunes, they're, you know, no words, you can absolutely name it anything you want. And our little boy, when he was a toddler, he loved Thomas the Train. And Thomas the Train, and it was called Great Waterton. And we played with blocks and Thomas Trains, and we built the town Great Waterton. We did this for months, like 20 times a day we would build Great Waterton. And then we would knock it down, and then we would build it again. So that's the reason I named after that. It was just such a fun time remembering when he was little like that. So that's where the title comes from.
Our daughter's probably too old for me to remember that, but as soon as you mentioned Thomas, I thought, okay, now I get it. So that is an absolute, that comes out of the box flying right away, just in case anybody wonders, this is a banjo album, and it comes right out of the box.
That's right.
It's just so fast and clean, and this is what I would say about your playing to anybody, that it's all clean and so clear, and if you've ever tried to play a banjo, which I play at, keeping the notes distinct and everything clear and separation, and just in case anyone was wondering, I just don't think there's anybody better at this type of tune, this speed, this tempo, and making every note clean and clear, and everything just it fits. It's just a wonderful, wonderful up-tempo tune.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And the players that I admire the most, you know, are great at that. They can do, you know, just the cleanliness involved in their playing is so substantial. You take J.D. Crowe and Earl Scruggs, and the separation between their notes is just so big that it makes them sound like it's a machine gun firing. You know,
accuracy. Yeah. And yet musical.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, musical, but also just precise. But, I mean, musical in the same sense, but
absolutely.
Also that wonderful precision. And Bill Emerson, I think, and you always do a nod to Bill Emerson when you play
sure
a tune.
Yeah.
Bill, to me, and we can talk about that tune, I think, as Locust Grove as we go along, but Bill is one of those guys who writes great banjo tunes for people who like to play banjo because they're just right there, and you just drive through them. You know what I mean? Locust Grove is like that, and you mentioned, I think on your last album, he had given you a tune that he had yet to record then. Was it No Steering, No Brakes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right, and he did it again, and I just feel so privileged that he does that. His album, Home of the Red Fox, is one of those essential records for me growing up, and I think it was one of the first, and you may know more than me, but it was one of the first albums anyone had ever done like that, where he wrote all the tunes, it was all instrumental, he kind of pulled in a super group roster of musicians to play, and it's just to this day, you know, Sweet Dixie and Theme Time and Cowboys and Indians.
Oh,
I mean, there are so many
classics.
Great banjo tunes from that album. They're classics, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he is one of those guys that I'm just humbled to know. So, and not only is he a great player, but he is a he writes all these great songs, you know. So for him to give me a tune on the last record and on Stringwork that he had never recorded is really a privilege.
They're all of his tunes and are unique. And as a banjo player, I mean, you love playing his tunes, but they're unique, and yet they're just straight down, but they're also complex in how, you know, he's so perfect. He's one of those guys that's so perfect as far as timing and tone and clarity.
Absolutely.
And when you hear him, you think, well, that I could do that. And then like a year later, you're still trying to get it the way Bill did it.
Exactly right.
And he's just the most, yeah, you know what I mean. You know what I mean. I'll tell you the other one. Another one that I really just I'm tickled at is Foggy Mountaintop, and I want you to tell the story of that one, because I love tunes that do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's such a special thing for me. Again, you know, solo records are meant to be individual, so you get to make these indulgences that are very individualistic, so you couldn't do this in a band setting. It would just be selfish if you tried to come up with something like this, but a banjo record for me gives me the opportunity to do this sort of thing, and my grandfather was a mandolin player and a tenor singer, and he was half of this Brother Skiles duet. We're talking pre-bluegrass, called Whitey and Hogan, and they were actually really successful in the early 40s and on into the 50s. They played on Charlotte, North Carolina-based radio station WBT, which was a powerhouse station just like WSM, and I had this cassette recording on the live radio show, and they played this song, and I don't know where I got it. I don't know how long I've had it, but I've just had it for a long time. And I got to thinking about how neat it would be, because I'm so proud of him and what he did, and I just thought it would be cool if we could combine it somehow. So that's what we did. We opened the song with the verse and chorus of them doing it, and then we come in and play, and at the end, it breaks back into the radio show, and you get to hear the announcer
yeah.
Introduce them, which is so special to me, because he refers to them as dirty faced boys from the mountains.
That's right.
You know, when you're born, your grandparents are already old in your mind. So to hear them referred to as kids is kind of cool. So I was so glad we got to do that.
It's great. And just for the people who are going to get this and listen to it, there you do. You get this scratchy, and I don't know, would you record it? Did you record it from the tape back into the studio and then splice it in? I'm not sure how you could do that, but
yeah, that's what we did. In fact, I just MP3'd it to Van Atkins, the engineer, and we just edited it together in the studio.
One of the cool things, not in the story, is just as you described it, amazing and just neat that you have this tape. First of all, that you can still hear it, that it's still available to be listened to, that it hasn't decayed, that you have this tape of it. But the way the song comes out, and like I say, for the people that'll get Stringworks, which is Kristen's new album, there's this real scratchy thing, and it's clearly Foggy Mountaintop, and it's done. All of a sudden, there's this explosion of banjo, which is Kristen, and it goes right into the song. And then, like you said, at the end of it, it comes back, and you get to hear the announcer. And that's a real thing. It's not someone that's you haven't tried to dummy up to make it sound like an old radio show. That's what it is.
It's old.
Oh, it is old.
It's old.
I love those old radio shows like that where you can hear them, and the fact that you could splice in with the relationship that you're talking about, and make that's a great tune anyway. But I just laughed at that one. I was tickled when I heard that.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Then you have I'll tell you my favorite right up front. And as I drive around listening to this, and I tell people I usually listen best in the car because I'm alone and I can really focus on things. My favorite tune on the album, and this was before I read the liner notes. I listen until I find out what I like, and then I'll read the liner notes. Traveler's Rest to me is something that I would want to play on a banjo.
Oh, yeah, cool. I'm glad you like that one, because that's one of the more artsy ones. And as far as, you know, straight-ahead banjo players, maybe the one they might not be attracted to as much, but it's one that I love, because that's some of my favorite things to play on the banjo is what you hear in that song. So I'm so glad to hear a positive response to it, because I love to write those songs, I love to play them, and I love to improvise over them. And it's really fun for, you know, no matter what instrument you're playing, when you have a tune that tempo and with those chords and just lots of space to do whatever you hear, you know, you can really kind of turn that into an emotional thing.
Do you?
So Traveler's Rest is one of my favorites.
Yeah, and I, before I even read the notes, and you talked about how you enjoy writing a tune like that, that type of melody and the pace and what you're just now described. I banjo players, a lot of stuff is high tempo. Of course, not all of it. That's a mistake to think that. But I also think that if I were sitting around by myself and wanted to play a tune just to hear the banjo and to do what you're describing as far as playing through these chords, Traveler's Rest is one of those tunes that I would just want to sit around and pick, maybe away from the bridge a little bit and just sort of enjoy.
Yeah.
It. It's just one of those beautiful melodies, I think.
You got it. And that's what I prefer to play, too. And for instance, we started out by talking about the real fast opener song, Great Waterson. That's my that's the hardest kind of tune for me to write. That feels that fun, and there's lots of energy, and people like that kind of thing, but it feels more like an athletic feat when you're playing that. It feels like a sprint when you're doing that kind of thing. And then Traveler's Rest just feels just so much more laid back, and I kind of tend to fall that way a little bit as a banjo player. It's just a matter of, the bands that you're in and what
right.
people like to hear and the medium that, especially the genre that we do in the sector of the genre, I guess you'd say that.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to do things like that as much. So I'm right with you.
But it allows it even I will say, the Eagle Eye Annie, not as slow paced, but those are tunes that I think that, and maybe it's just me and you and I think alike, that you get to really play the banjo as a musical instrument as opposed to part of a sound. It's just because they're beautiful sounds.
Agree. Yeah. I agree, and that's probably my favorite instrumental is probably Eagle Eye Annie. Again, easy for me to write those kinds of tunes, and I struggle a lot more when I need to write a more bluegrass sounding, even though Eagle Eye Annie, like you said, it's kind of up tempo and there's nothing out really outside the box about. But those hard driving bluegrass tunes are hard for me to write because everything I try just sounds like a watered down Scruggs instrumental, just like a bad Scruggs instrumental. it's what I always think, So you got to try to find some kind of turn or something to make it unique, and that's the goal. But that's what I mean. When I write those fast bluegrass songs, they're somewhat contrived, and then I sit down and I think, okay, I need to write one of these, and what can I do with this idea to make it do what it needs to do? But when I write something like Eagle Eye Annie or Traveler's Rest, that just kind of falls out.
Yeah.
And that's a bit purer, because it's just coming from what you hear. So it's everybody has their little niche, and I think you and I kind of fall on the same one as far as what's fun to play.
Oh, and you wrote several tunes on this. You do a Scruggs, you do Farewell Blues on there, which I think would be, of course, you bring new stuff to it. I mean, it's everybody hears the different versions over the years, and on Farewell Blues, you add your own licks to it, which is, you were just talking about writing a tune like that how do you escape all those things that have happened before you with Earl and JD and everyone and Bill. But you do add something unique to Farewell Blues, I think, or else why would you do it? But, I mean, I do think you've made it a little bit different.
Oh, thanks. Well, what I tried to do with that, because I have just so much respect for Scruggs, and it's not easy to copy him. Like, the older you get, and the hopefully better you get at copying, and the more you realize how much you fail at copying him. So I've always tried to do one, standard on a banjo CD, and I did Farewell Blues, but again, going back to sort of the need for what I was writing, I wanted to record Home Sweet Home, and because I just love that tune.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's kind of more along the lines of what we've been talking about, except it's, one from Earl. And so I was going to do Home Sweet Home, and then I realized we were lacking fast tunes. We needed something faster. So I went with Farewell Blues instead and then wrote Fisher.
Fisher, yeah.
Because I was thinking Home Sweet Home when I wrote the tune Fisher. But back to Farewell Blues, the thing that impresses me so much about the template, if you want to call it that he created is at the very, very end, I play some new stuff.
Yes.
But I did my best to just basically do what he did until the very end. And every other instrument has changed so drastically in what they play. In other words, you wouldn't have even had a mandolin break with Latin Scruggs on that tune.
Right.
If you had a mandolin break from that era, it would have sounded so different than what Wayne played. The fiddle would have sounded different than Adam. There would have been no guitar break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every instrument has evolved in the style that you played in so much that it's almost an entirely new thing. The banjo, on the other hand, if you listen to what I was doing leading up to the very end, it's all what he did, and it sounds very modern and outside the box.
Yes.
And it's what he was doing, way back then. Mm-hmm. So I'm impressed over and over about how what he created is truly timeless, and that you can put it against any backdrop musically today, and it still fits in. And in fact, it's probably the most appropriate thing to do.
I love talking to people like you, and if they're tuning in, I'm talking to Kristen Scott Benson about her new album, Streamworks, and we were just talking about Earl. And I love talking to people like you who are so accomplished. And even Sonny Osmer does the same thing. When they talk, when people at your level talk about Earl, it's just it's even at the level and all you've accomplished, and of course all Sonny's accomplished, which was on monumental. When you talk about Earl and what he did the first time through, invented the sound, invented the techniques, there's still things that are unapproachable.
It's right. No one has ever, I said one time in something I wrote that I'm not aware of any other instrument that the object or your weight as a player is so much tied to recreating the past as bluegrass banjo. Now, what we're talking about within the bluegrass realms here.
Right.
That's really your weight as a banjo player. How well can you do what Earl did all that time ago? And it just seems as if the thing that impresses me most is no one has ever executed as well as he has, but no one has ever created something that serves the genre of bluegrass better than what he did. In other words, he got it right the first time, and no one else has reinvented it since.
And so much of what he got right, which we now all listen to and are just amazed at, he was still using a skinhead.
Yeah.
And you think, how in the world?
Yeah, I know.
It's not fair. It's just not fair. Well, then you mentioned Home Sweet Home, and you did write Fisher, and if you really listen, but tell me how Fisher to you is paying not. I know what I hear the parts you're playing, but when another tune you wrote, Fisher, and you mentioned Home Sweet Home, and sort of you pull in some elements of that.
Yeah, so I love Home Sweet Home, and I wanted something with that same kind of feel, so I wrote Fisher and C, and I even, as a throw out to the banjo players on a trade section with Jim Van Cleve on fiddle, I even did the verbatim Home Sweet Home lick to sort of clue everyone in that notices that's what I was thinking. But of course, the B part I branch out, try to make it a little bit different, and the A part is real simple. But what I was trying to accomplish was something that would give the same mood as Home Sweet Home. That's what I was going for, and I ended up writing it in C with that in mind. So, that's just an example of when you're doing a record, you look at what you have, and think, okay, this might not be the best fit, so, I'll write something and just slide that into a new slot and just kind of look at the record as a whole. You know how you have to do that for any album.
How long were you in putting this final product together?
As far as gathering material, some of them I had for years, like the tune that Grant Williams wrote, Sink or Swim. Well, he wrote two on the album, but Sink or Swim, I had Mickey Harris sing that, and I had tried to get the Rascals to do that. I was going to get Jamie Johnson to sing it, and they just didn't want to do it, and so I filed that one away as, I really like this song, so I'll keep that one, and then When Fall Comes to New England, the first time I ever heard that song, I knew that I wanted to record it. I just had to record that, but I knew it was clearly not a gospel song.
Right.
So that one, I've kept for a while. And then some of the things come right at the end, like you got to climb over the cross. I already had the lineup in mind, but I was still listening to things, you know, leading up to recording, and I heard this song that Becky Bowler wrote with Guy Stevenson, You Gotta Climb Over the Cross, and I loved it. Immediately thought of Sean Lane. So, for instance, that one just happened maybe a couple weeks before we went into track. So, some of them I've had in my back pocket for a while, and then the others, you know, when you get serious about recording, then you start actually being critical as you think about it, and writing tunes to add to it, and figuring out which ones, you know, aren't really good enough, and all that kind of painful stuff.
Well, you have great vocalists. We don't want to let them in. In the Cheryl Wheeler tune you mentioned, When Fall Comes to New England, you have Claire Lynch as a wonderful drum.
Yeah, and Claire was such a jewel to do it for me because I didn't know her very well, hardly at all, beyond just, you know, walking past each other when sets end or something. And Sean, I didn't know her really well, except for a real casual way like that. The rest of the guys are my buddies.
Chris Jones back
and,
forever.
Yeah, so those are like my go-to guys, my pals that I love. But with Cheryl and Sean, with Claire and Sean, you know, I had to ask and just hope that they would say yes, and they both said yes. I was so thankful because I felt like they were the perfect vocalist for that song. As soon as I heard each of those tunes, I immediately thought, Sean Lane should sing this, Claire Lynch should sing this, and I asked and they said yes. So that was such a treat.
And you were going to sing part of Sink or Swim, but you had jury duty. Is that real?
Yeah. I was going to sing Harmony on a Few. And we had, I put Nikki Harris last because he was going to sing Harmony on a lot of stuff. So I had all the lead singers come in, and Nikki was going to be last and sing his song and sing some baritone. And I got jury duty. And, you know, some people say, I've gotten out of that. It's no big deal. Listen, this was not something I was getting out of. I mean, I really tried, I wrote letters and everything else.
It's not easy.
And I had to do it. I had to do it. So they take your cell phones when you go in
for
good reason. They take the cell phones away. And so I had no way of even telling Nikki and Cody. Cody Kilby is the guy that engineered the vocals in Nashville. I said, if you hear from me, it means I'm out. I have my phone and I'm on the way. And if you don't, then I'm still in there with no way to tell you. So thankfully, Nikki Harris can sing any part. It's just much better that he did it anyway. But he sang every harmony part that was left on the record. He sang that night.
Because you were in jury duty.
Yeah, because
and
I
you
had jury
tell
duty.
Him. And you couldn't you tell him. That's amazing.
That's right. So he just did everything that wasn't done yet, he sang.
Well, it worked out well. There's a couple that Mickey sings. The last tune on the album, and as I read through your notes, I want you to talk about Till the Day Breaks because it is to you the most important, I'll say the most important, maybe your favorite song on the album, but talk about that tune a little bit. We've kind of hit on the rest of them.
Yeah, so I thought that was the perfect way to end the record. And first, as a side note for all the banjo players, a really cool part about this song is at the very beginning, the very end, I played Sonny's old six-string Vega banjo that did Listening to the Rain.
Mm-hmm.
I borrowed that from the guy who owns it now, who's a guy in Knoxville named Byron Robbins. And I felt like, because it is a banjo record, I needed to do something banjo-centric with this song, and I thought it was a beautiful melody just to kind of play by itself. But Grant needed to sing it in G, and to make that work with a low droning string, I needed a six string. So I called Sonny, and he hooked me up with Byron. So for the banjo players, that might be something they're interested
it's
in.
Pretty
but
cool.
the song is Till the Day Breaks, and Grant Williams is probably my best friend. We met in college, the first week of school at Belmont University in Nashville, and we've just all been. They got engaged right when Wayne and I got engaged. We got married a month apart, so we just all four been great friends. And he wrote this song, and I just love what it speaks to because it just speaks to all the intangibles that we share as human beings. And I just love kind of the mantra that that it represents. It gave me a wonderful chance to talk to our son about our faith, and it's something I think that anyone can relate to. But it just really embodied how I feel about my faith with Christ, and I felt like it was a song that maybe even non-believers could relate to, and hopefully something that touches people.
Well, it did, and Grant, we'll give Grant credit for that when he also wrote or co-wrote Sink or Swim, is that right?
Yeah, he just wrote it by himself. He wrote both those tunes, and he sang Till the Day Breaks.
Okay, that's right. Okay. Yeah, great vocal on that, too. I was trying to make sure I picked up the vocalist. I forgot him a little bit.
Yeah.
I wanted you to talk about the last tune, so it's nice. It's a nice way to end out a great album. It's got every, you know, this is not to pull it down at all, but I'm just going to say this, in a high degree, it has something for everybody that wants to listen to banjo players, and not that you're trying to cover the spectrum, but everything on here is great, and it can appeal to anybody, whether you want to be the high up-tempo bluegrass thing, the nice traveler's rest, the melodic kind of feel of just kind of being relaxed, the vocals, it really is. I'm crazy about this album.
Thank you so much, and that was my goal, and what I really wanted it to do. If you just look at the tunes on the record and the way that I get to play and the way that other people play and the kinds of songs that we chose to have people sing, it's really a great representation of what my tastes are as far as what I like. And that's very encouraging to hear you say that you feel like that it would be attractive to a lot of different listeners, because it really is a nice little cross-section of, you know, where I live musically.
Yeah, you're backing up vocalists. You're taking the lead on different types of tunes and different tempos. And, boy, you just nail them all. Let me ask you this on the six-string banjo, because I've seen those. How long did it take you to – had you played one before?
I had never played one before. And I'll tell you, what I did with it on this album, it was pretty easy because it's so different. Now, I will say this. It's learning an entirely new instrument, because the sixth string, which is the lowest string, is a low G. So, you know, you have to learn where to put your fingers to make chords. You know, very basic things that it's been a long time since any of us had to think about that. And so it gave me kind of some, I don't know, it reconnected me with some students and stuff that I teach, because I see them, like, struggle to remember where to play something. And I had a little bit of that at first, as far as figuring out where are these notes going to be, you know, because it's not stacked the way that you're used to the end of being tuned. But with that being said, what I did right hand wise was so different and so slow and so melodic that it didn't mess with me. Now, when I tried to play normal bluegrass stuff on it, it messed with me. It was funny though, I could go to it and adjust quicker then I could go back to a five string, if that makes sense.
It does.
I adapted quicker to that than I did going back to the normal thing.
It does, and for people listening, you know, five string banjos, you basically have one bass string that's wound, and on the sixth string, you add another bass string. And I think Sonny either borrowed the idea or came up with it, Sonny Osmer, because he wanted to get...
He did.
Yeah, he wanted to find deeper notes. Yeah, so and of course, the way he described it, he got it and was recording with it, like, right away, but that's Sonny. But he also said this, that for playing it as long as he did, that it changed, it affected his playing coming back to the five string.
I believe it. And he played it exclusively, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
So you hear all that vintage Osmond Brothers stuff in the 70s, because I think Listening to the Rain was 1970. So he already had it then, and it really did add this new element to their whole sound. So he played it a lot, and he used it a lot. If you listen to live shows from the Osmond Brothers, he made good use of having that string. He didn't just use it occasionally.
No.
It was every song. There was something there.
Yep.
So I can imagine that it messed with him when he went back the other way.
That's what he says. Well, you know how he is. But he did it, literally had it, was playing that stage that night, I think recorded with it right away, and just went on from there like, okay, there's another string on there.
Well,
I can deal with it.
That's how he is. Yeah.
Right. Well, listen, I appreciate you taking the time. I know, where are you right now? You're out, you're getting ready for to play somewhere? You have a festival or what?
Yeah, we're actually at Frankfort, Indiana.
Okay.
Basically Chicago. We're at a great venue here, great just city festival, and it's in a neat place and neat people. It's great food, great hospitality, beautiful weather. It's just a great day.
Well, Kristen, you have I'm talking to Kristen Scott Benson here, which I appreciate. You have a website, which I will say is KS. If they just search ksbbanjo.com, they'll be able to find stuff about you.
That's right, ksbbanjo.com. That's mm-hmm. new. And they can email me from that site. They can also find me on Facebook from that site. And they can also link to the Grascals that way, so you can find out where we're playing.
You're everywhere. Let me ask you this one more question real quick, and I'll let you go.
Yeah.
Do you feel like this album, not just because time has passed since you've been performing for so long with, gosh, you talked about Chris and Sally a long time ago and all the different people you played with in Cordal. Do you feel like, have you reached a new maturity? Not that you weren't mature, but do you feel like this album is a more mature effort for you? And that's a horrible word to use, because I don't mean, you know what I'm saying?
No, I got it. Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think the best way I would put it, and let me preface it by saying, we did this record fast. We put all 12 tunes in one day.
Mm.
We fixed the next, and then the vocals were done later. But, you know, as far, I had this dream of just, like, spending enormous amounts of time doing a record, you know, that it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah,
as far as the playing, just the raw mechanics of the playing, it just is what it is. It's how I played that day or how I fixed the next day. You know, it just it just is what it is. I hope that the overall picture of it is more mature, though. I mean, certainly we hope that we grow as players and become more seasoned. And you know, that you have just more appropriate thoughts and better execution and all of those things. But what I think the maturity may reflect more than anything is just the overall big picture as far as arranging and
yes.
body and material
and
pairing the right people and getting, you know, the players are so great and figuring out how to get all of us together. I mean, those types of things are certainly something that you grow with. But as far as actually going in and recording it, you know what? It's how your feet hit the floor that day. Sometimes you have great days. Sometimes they're not. I didn't have the best day, actually, when we recorded this. I'm glad that nobody has called me on that yet. But, you know, you just, it's a snapshot. If you're playing a show on stage, you may have good days, bad days. And that's what this kind of record is, because you only get, you know, 7 or 8 hours to cut the tracks and then another 7 or 8 to kind of spruce it up. So I hope it is a more mature vision, I guess I should say.
Yeah,
I hope that makes sense.
It does, and I think the way you've described it as far as the elements you put together for the album, your playing, and the different people you've pulled in, I think, yes, that. And you know what? You're kind of just getting started still, even though you've gotten so much attention for so long, so we have so much more to look forward to.
Well, I hope so, and I appreciate you spending some time with me today.
Sure.
I think the world of you, and I love to talk to other banjo players.
Well, thank you so much for being available, Kristen Scott Benson. String Works will be out when this show airs. It'll be probably the week after it airs, and July 22nd, I think, is the date we're looking for. And then they can always find you with the Grascals. You're everywhere.
That's right. Thank you, Steve.
All right. I'll talk to you later then.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was Kristen Scott Benson. Listen, Kristen wanted to be on this program. I will tell you this now, and just my opinion, Stringworks is going to become a monumental release for 2016. There is so much great music. Kristen really has reached a level of musicianship that's rarely accomplished. And she wanted to come on this show, and I'll tell you why. Yes, I play banjo a little. I can talk to her about these things, and I know Kristen. But here's the reason that all of the artists are so willing to come to this program and want to be on this show to talk about albums and recordings and things that haven't come out yet. It's because they know the audience gets it. The audience to Unreal Bluegrass by now gets it, and they want to hear the nuance of what's going on in a musician at that level and what they're doing and what they're recording. And to you, I thank you so much for the people listening. It allows us to get people like Kristen Scott Benson to come in and talk about an album that's not even out yet. It happens a lot. Wonderful person, wonderful musician. She talked about her husband, Wayne Benson. Fabulous musician. You see him if you ever see Third Time Out. Wayne's always there. What a wonderful opportunity to speak with Kristen. I do like her so much, and she's so much into what she's doing and such a professional. And, boy, she can play banjo.
Hi, this is Kristen Scott Benson. I've enjoyed listening to interviews with some of my favorite people like Bela Fleck, Sonny Osborne, and Bill Emerson. Visit UnrealBluegrass.com where you can hear those interviews and many more, hosted by Steve Martin.